So thank you very much for being here. Thank you for having the possibility to talk here. So I talk about joint work with Paco Santos from Cantabria in Spain. So please feel free to interrupt at any time. So the first thing I want to talk about is the motivation of this work. And the motivation is some combinatorial structures on certain generalizations of triangulations. So I have three families of geometric graphs which generalize the first, the leftmost family. So the leftmost family is just the triangulations of a convex n-gon, so it's known by anyone in this room. So I take n point in convex position and I'm interested in triangulations of them. So I see these triangulations as maximal crossing free sets of edges. And then there are two natural generalizations of this family. So the first one is the one known as pseudo-triangulations. So here you look at sets of edges which are crossing free and which are pointed. So pointed means that if you take any vertex and you look at the edges which are incident to this vertex, then they should generate a pointed cone. So you should be able to find a half space not containing any of them. So this means this is pointed. So you look at sets of edges which are pointed and crossing free, and you are interested in maximal such sets, and you call them pseudo-triangulations of your point set. So your point set is in general position, it's not anymore in convex position. And the last family is that of multi-triangulations. So now you have a parameter k. So in all my pictures, I fix k equals to 2. And you're interested in sets of edges which avoid k plus 1 crossings. So this is a crossing, or a 2 crossing. And this is a 3 crossing, and so on. So k plus 1 crossing is a set of k plus 1 edges which pairwise cross. So in the intersection graph, it's a k plus 1 clique. So you're interested in sets of edges which are in the intersection graph, which are k plus 1 clique free, and which are maximal for this property. So these are called k triangulations, and they are more recent. So triangulations, everyone knows them. So triangulations, they are studied in computational geometry, and multi-triangulations, k-triangulations, they're more recent and studied more in combinatorics. Okay, so the first thing I want to observe is that the blue edges are always here by maximality. So in triangulations, you always have the boundary. In solo triangulations, it's the same. And in multi-triangulations, you always have the first k boundaries, because in order to have a k plus 1 crossing, if this edge is in the k plus 1 crossing, it is because it has k vertices on each side. So if you're too much on the boundaries, then you cannot be in a k plus 1 crossing, and consequently you are in any k triangulation. So the interesting edges are the red edges, and this is what we will be interested in. Okay, so here we gave three definitions, so three families of geometric graphs, which are defined by an avoiding definition, so it avoids a certain pattern, so pattern with crossings, and we can also define them with certain areas or let's say generalizations of triangles. So in triangulation, it's clear that the triangulation is a decomposition of the n-gon into triangles. For pseudo-triangulation, it's quite the same, except that you decompose the convex hull of your point sets into objects which are called pseudo-triangles. So pseudo-triangle is it's a simple polygon which has three convex corners, and these three convex corners are related by concave chains. So it looks like this. So here you see many of them, and in particular a triangle is a pseudo-triangle. And for k-triangulations, we have also a certain decomposition. It looks a bit more complicated, but it's not that complicated. So for k-triangulation, you look at what we call k-stars. So a k-star is a set of 2k plus 1 points. which are related by their k edges. So the edges, so you take, let me draw for k equal 2. So I take 5 points on my unit circle, and I relate them jumping k by k. So it gives me something like this. So of course, if I take k equal 1, then I get 3 points related by 1 edges, so I get a triangle. So this is a natural generalization of the triangle. And it also really works well for k-triangulations in the sense that if you look at any of these red edges, say each one is contained in precisely 2 k-stars, one on each side. So it's really a decomposition as a complex of stars. This is the first paper we did with Santos. And this, so you see that we have now a definition in terms of triangles, pseudo-triangles, and k-stars. And this is what we will use. Okay. And so this explains many things on multi-triangulations. For example, if you take any k-triangulation, the number of red edges is always the same. So for triangulation, it's always n minus 3, where n is the number of points. And here, it's always a formula which depends only on k and n. And we can explain this in so we can explain this just by double counting here, but we can also explain this by the next slide. So the next slide is about flips. So if you take one of those internal edges, so those red edges that I drawn before, in a triangulation, then you know that it's contained in 2 triangles, one on each side, and you can remove this edge and replace it by the unique common bisector between these 2 triangles, and this is called the flip. It defines you a new triangulation, and the same is true for the 3 families. So if you take any of these internal edges, the one which were red at the beginning, then it's contained in 2 cells, one on each side, and these 2 cells have a unique common bisector. So for, let me just be precise a little bit. So for pseudo-triangles, I have to tell you, so pseudo-triangles look like this. And this is a bisector of this pseudo-triangle, but also this is a bisector. So it's any. So imagine that you are rolling a tangent inside the pseudo-triangle, so it's an internal tangent, but I call also that a bisector. So if you take any edge, take the 2 cells which are adjacent to it, and replace this edge by the common bisector of these 2 cells, and you obtain the flip. So we know that the graph of flip is connected, so in particular you know that the number of edges is always the same and so on. Okay, and what interests me is to study the combinatorial and geometric properties of this graph of flips. And in particular, I want to know whether this graph is or not the graph of a polytope. So for triangulation, it's really well known that this graph of flips on triangulations of the n-gon is a graph of the so-called n-3 dimensional icosahedron. And this icosahedron is really important in many areas of mathematics, in particular in combinatorics and algebra. So for pseudo-triangulation, it's also known that the graph of flips on pseudo-triangulations of a given point set in the Euclidean plane is the graph of a polytope. So it's a recent work by, about 7 years ago now, for me it's recent, of course it's in the scale of mathematics, it's recent. It's a proof by Santos, Rothe, and Schreinu. And it's really interesting because the proof of this fact is uses rigidity of those pseudo-triangulations. So it's really different tools that I will use today, and this is completely different. But this proof is really interesting. But for multi-triangulation, it's not known. So if you look at the graph of multi-triangulation of k-triangulation of an n-gon, it's not known whether it's polytopal or not. We know that it's the graph of a topological sphere, but we don't know whether this sphere is realizable or not. And this is the main question I try to solve. And this is the main question I will not manage to solve today. But I will show you a polytope which has nice properties with respect to flips, but it's not the polytope I would like to construct. So this question mark will be here at the end of the talk. But it's in this direction, let's say. Okay. So the first thing I want to tell you is that these three families. Oh yes, the first thing I wanted to tell you is why I'm interested. Why should I bother about realizing this graph of flips as polygons? So one of the easy reasons why I do that is because we, in polytope theory, we are missing examples. So we know cubes, we know simplices, we know some families of polytopes, isosahedra and so on, but the number of examples, the families, the infinite families of examples that we can really describe combinatorially is not that big. So it's always interesting to have a family of polytopes that we can understand. And to give you an example, Santos recently disproved the Hirsch conjecture, and this proof he obtained it by studying the family of polytopes, which are the prismatoids, which we will hear about this afternoon. So I'm not saying that I will disprove the Hirsch conjecture by studying the multi-isosahedron. I'm just saying that studying polytopes, studying examples of polytopes, just help people working on polytopes. Okay, so the first thing I want to do is to show you that the three families of geometric graphs can be seen really as the same object by duality. So what I mean, what do I mean by duality? So I work in R in the plane, so I mean R2. And so this is the top picture, and in the bottom I will present the line space of R2. So if I have a line here, an oriented line, I look at its angle with respect to the horizontal axis and its distance, algebraic distance to the origin. So this is my line, theta d. And I'm not interested in the oriented lines, but in any line. So these two lines for me are the same. And this, the line oriented in the other direction is just obtained by this identification. So if I just rotate by 180 degrees, then I just obtain the opposite algebraic distance. So this line space is just the Möbius strip. Okay, so I think this is really classical here, but it was important because we will really use this. So here I represent, on top you have the initial point sets, so they are in R2, and here you have the Möbius strips. So here you have the theta, and here you have the d's. So when I rotate by pi, then I just change the orientation. Okay, and now, so a line on top is represented by a point on bottom, and now I look at the point on top, and I look at all lines passing through this point, and it gives me one parameter family, so I can see all those lines, and on bottom I have what is called a pseudo-line arrangement, so this, each line there, each point there corresponds to a curve here, and any two curves cross exactly once, and you know where. Okay, so this is what I start from, this is really classical. And now I want to show you that I can explain triangulation, pseudo triangulations, and multi triangulations in this picture. So, namely, I take a graph on top. So, a graph on top is a set of segments, so a set of edges, and an edge is just, for example, the edge between 5 and 3 is just the intersection between the two curves 5 and 3 here. So, I put a set of dots in the intersection points, and now I will play the same game as before. So I just look at all. So let's look at this red triangle, and I will look at all the bisectors of this red triangle, and I will follow it. So it starts here, and I start rotating. So you see that I start this way, and I rotate, and at one point I arrive at the edge which is here, which is this intersection point, and at that point I will change points. So I will imagine you have a ray here, and I will just reflect here. So each time I see such a point, I reflect. Okay, and it corresponds to following the common bisector, the set of bisectors of a given triangle. So I do that, and I obtain again. This is a joint work with Michel, by the way, Michel Poucoulin. And I obtain a set of so each cell here is a certain line here, and you see that two lines touch when the two triangles there have a common edge, and they cross when the two triangles have a common bisector. So since I know that any pair of triangles has exactly one common bisector, I know that any pair of lines here cross exactly once. So I know that what I obtain is just something, it's just a new pseudo-line arrangement, which is drawn on the initial arrangement, except that you see that I never touch the external hull, because the external hull corresponds to the tangents to this body, which are never bisectors of triangles. So you see the rule. The rule is really simple. You follow the bisector there, it gives you a new pseudo-line arrangement, and it turns out that this is a bijection. So if you give me a pseudo-line arrangement here, which covers everything except the first level, then I look at the contacts, I put one edge each time I have a contact, and on top I obtain a triangulation. So this is, I explain you everything on triangulation, but you can do the same here and here. So here it's exactly the same, except that I don't start from a very nice convex arrangement, I start from any arrangement in a general position, gives me this picture. And here it's exactly the same, except again I start from the convex arrangement, but I remove k levels instead of one. So the same game is always true. And you see here that it's really, I mean, these three objects, we see that they are the same. And let me go a little further and really draw them as the same. So after a while, it's just annoying to draw with curves. So I just stretch everything. And you see that now a contact is represented by such a black line, which is not used. And a crossing is represented by such a thing. And now you can forget what is outside. And now you obtain the formal definition of what I will work with. So I have this network. It's called the sorting network. So it's a set of n horizontal lines. And between consecutive lines, you have some commutators. So the lines, I call them levels. And I will need the something. So the bounded set of this network, I will call them bricks. So these are the bricks of my brick polytope, you will see later. And I'm interested in pseudo lines on it. So pseudo line is just an abscissa monotone curve on this network, and any pair of pseudo line can either cross this way or have a contact this way. And I'm interested in sets in pseudo line arrangements. So there are sets of n pseudo lines with any which have pairwise exactly one crossing and maybe some contacts. So this is an example. Okay, just one little definition I will need afterwards is what I call the contact graph of an arrangement. So we take an arrangement and replace each line by a node, and each contact by an arc which goes from top to bottom. So here the arc will go from green to purple. So it's this arc. And on top here, the arc will go from purple to green, so it's the other arc. So this is the definition of the contact graph, and you see that the contact graph characterizes the arrangement, so it's really the same kind of object. Okay, so this is what I needed. And now let me just tell you again what is the flip. So we thought about the flip in the primal picture, but you can see that in the dual picture, it's really simple. So you have this arrangement, and you choose one contact, here, this one. And this contact is a contact between purple and green, so you look for the corresponding crossing, so it's a unique crossing between purple and green, so it's here, and you just exchange the contact you were looking for, so this contact with this crossing, and you obtain the drawing on the right. So you see that you don't touch the other pseudo lines, you just touch the two which were in contact at the contact you are looking. Okay. And now you can look at the graph of flips again, and the graph of flips is connected, and it is regular of this degree. So the degree is just the number of contacts you have in such an arrangement. And the question again is whether this graph is a graph of a simple polytope, and the answer again is I don't know. And I will not answer this question, unfortunately, but I will show you a polytope which has nice property with respect to this flip. Yeah. Yes, which you lose when you erase this stuff. So you have a parameter k, but you sort of, what I say is that this parameter is not important. So you start from this arrangement in convex position, you remove k levels, and what you keep is the network you will work with. It will be different from different k, but the number of contacts that you have here is different from different k. So even the dimension is different. Yeah. So the polytope you will obtain depends on the network, and the network depends on k. Yeah. Yeah, so the only thing that I'm saying is that I can see these three pictures. If I remove these dotted things, are just the same pictures. I mean, the same family. So there are just three examples of a bigger family, which is a family of sorted networks. Okay. So this was the question, and now, so again, I don't answer this question. I just give you a nice polytope, which I call the brick polytope. And the brick polytope is play with bricks. So the brick polytope is a polytope which I obtain as a convex hull of certain vectors. So I associate to each pseudo line arrangement. So first I fix the network, and the brick polytope will be associated to this network. So to each pseudo line arrangement which is supported by my network, I associate a vector, and at the end I take the convex hull of all these vectors, and it gives me what I call the brick polytope. So I, in order to define the brick polytope, I just have to define with this this vector. So this vector I call it the brick vector of an arrangement. So if my network has n levels, then the brick vector is in Rn, and the jth coordinate is just the number of bricks which are of the networks which are below the jth pseudo line of lambda. So for example, in this pseudo line arrangement, the first coordinate will be 2 because I have 2 bricks which are below red. The second coordinate will be 6 because I have 6 bricks below blue, and so on, 8, 1, and 6. And what you see, so 2, 6, 8, 1, 6, is the brick vector of lambda. Okay, and so at the end, I take the convex hull of all these vectors. It gives me the brick polytope, and I want to explain you the combinatorics of these polytopes in terms of the network. So the first thing that I want to observe is that we define the brick polytope in Rn, but of course it's not full dimensional, because each time you give me a brick, so let's say, for example, this one, in any arrangement, I know how many levels are on top of it. So I look at its depth in this network, and I know that it will be counted twice. Here it will be counted in the blue coordinate and in the green coordinate. So I know that the sum of my coordinates here is always the sum of the depths of the bricks. So I know that I'm in a certain hyperplane orthogonal to 1, 1, 1, 1. Okay. So, and so in general, if the network is generic enough, then n minus 1 will be the dimension of the brick polytope. Okay. So before we go to the combinatorial description, I just give you the simplest example you can imagine. So you take just 2 levels and m commutators. Then you have to choose among those m commutators, you just have to choose the one you use as a crossing, and the other one have to be contacts. And so the graph of flips is just a complete graph on m vertices. And but unfortunately, the brick polytope is just a little segment. Just to tell you that I don't realize the big polytope I want to realize. I just realize a little segment in this case. So why is it a little segment? For example, here the brick vector is 1, 1. So I just have to count the number of bricks below red and the number of bricks below blue. So in general, the only things which I see is the first one and the last one. So these are the vertices of the brick polytope. And the other one, unfortunately, they are in the middle, so I don't see them. Okay, so now we go to the combinatorial properties of this polytope. So the only thing that we have to understand is how does flip act on the brick vector. So remember what is a flip. So I have a pseudo line arrangement, and I choose one contact. I look at the corresponding crossing between. So I have the contact between purple and green. I look at the corresponding crossing, and I exchange this contact with the corresponding crossing. And I told you I don't touch the other pseudo lines. So I only change the purple and the green pseudo lines. So I know that the number of bricks which are below those pseudo lines which are not touched will still be the same. So the only coordinates of the brick vector which change are the one which are involved in the flip. And how do they change? Well, I just take some things which are in purple and I send them to green. So they were below purple and now they are below green. So the difference of the brick vectors, so remember that this W of lambda, omega of lambda is the brick vector of lambda. So the difference of the brick vectors is just a positive multiple of Ej minus Ei. So Ej is the canonical So E1 to EN are the canonical vectors of the canonical basis of Rn, sorry. And J and I are just purple and green in this case. So they are the pseudo lines involved in the flip. Okay, so in other words, what changed? So I just have a contact, so it's remember that it's an arc in the contact graph. And I just look, if I have this arc ij in the contact graph, I just look at ej minus ei, and I have a positive multiple of that. So we see immediately that we will use some incidences in this contact graph. So let me just recall a little bit of, let's say, basic oriented matrix. So you have a, it's graphical oriented matrix, so it's really easy. So you start from a directed graph, directed multigraph, and you look at the incidence matrix of this graph, and look at the column vectors of this incidence matrix, and I call that the incidence configuration. So it's a set of ej minus ei, where ij is an edge of an oriented arc of j. And then I look at the incidence cone, which is just a cone generated by this incidence configuration. And this slide is terrible, but you don't have to read that. You just have to see that on the left, I have written some orientation properties of the incidence configuration. So whether it's, I mean, these are even just matrix properties, so whether they form independent spanning or basis of the vector space they live in. And then you have some orientation properties, so whether they are circuits, co-circuits, so these are just oriented matrix stuff. And so on the left, you have this vectorial or orientation properties of the incidence configuration, and on the right, you have just orientation properties of the graph itself. So what I say is that you can just read one in the other. And what interests me is just these two last lines. So this is just the translation of this remark on the incidence cone. So what is really important for me is that the incidence cone of the graph of the graph G is pointed if and only if the graph is acyclic. So this I will really use. And the second thing is that the facets of the incidence cone of the graph correspond to the complement. So they correspond to minimal direct cuts in G. So they are their normal vectors are characteristic vectors of the complements of these cuts. So it's not important to have the details, but just remember that facets correspond to minimal direct cuts. We'll use that afterwards. Okay, so now that we are here, what we said in the last slide here, so remember this remark. So how does flip act on the contact on the brick vector? This remark can just be translated to a theorem. This is actually the only theorem of the paper. Everything just follows from this theorem. So what we say is look at the brick polytope and look at a certain vector of this brick polytope. So look at a certain omega of lambda in this brick polytope, and you look at what you see from this vector, from this vector. So you just see a certain cone, and I pretend that, so let me write it differently. Let me write it this way. So you look at, you are a certain point, and you look at all other points. So you look at this. Arrangement. So you look at the cone that you see from this point, and I pretend that this is exactly the incidence cone. I want lambda. Yeah, thanks. So lambda is fixed, and I pretend that this is exactly the incidence cone of the contact graph. So what we knew is that the incidence cone of the contact graph is clearly included in this cone, because this is exactly saying when I do a flip, then I follow the rays in this incidence cone of the contact graph. And what we say is that it's actually equal. And once you have this, you have all the combinatorial description of the brick polytope. Actually, I have written this there. So this slide is much better than the previous one. So this is what is written here. So the cone of the brick polytope at a certain brick vector is precisely the incidence cone of this pseudo-line arrangement lambda. Okay, and now I have everything. So why do I have everything? So for example, what is the vertex of the brick polytope? A vertex is somewhere is a certain arrangement where the cone is pointed. And the cone is pointed if and only if the contact graph is acyclic. So just for free you have the vertices. And for free you have the graph also. So the graph, where is this? So the graph of the brick polytope is just a subgraph whose vertices are a subgraph of the flip graph, whose vertices are some pseudo-line arrangement whose contact graphs are cyclic. And you also have the facets for free. So remember that the facets of the cone of the contact of the incident cone correspond to certain cuts, directed cuts. I said that. And here, so you can give the facets of the facets that correspond to minimal directed cuts in the contact graphs of the arrangement. And you also have the faces, so you can continue. This is just Torrentine matrix of sorts. So once you have the top theorem, then you have all for free as programs. Okay. So this is what I wanted to say about just the vertices and the facet descriptions. And before we go to examples, I have two more slides on the combinatorial descriptions. The first thing is I will show you a Minkowski sum decomposition of this polytope. So it will be interesting later. It's a bit complicated, but just read the last... maybe I need the definition of this. So I know I have a network, and I just fix one brick. So I fix one brick, this gray brick. And now I look at an arrangement supported by my network, and I denote W, so lambda is the arrangement, and B is the brick, is the characteristic vector of the pseudo-lines which pass above, of the pseudo-line of lambda which pass above the brick B. So here it will be 0, 1, 1, 0, 1. Okay? What is important is that we define the brick polytope as the convex hull of the brick vectors. And if you think 2 minutes, the brick vector is just a sum over all bricks of these little vectors, of these characteristic vectors. Because, so you count, I mean, it's just double counting, right? So you want to count the number of bricks which are below, you can just for each brick count. Which pseudo lines are above, right? It's exactly the same. And this theorem just says that you can invert these two operators. So you can take the Minkowski sum of the convex hulls of these little things. So no lambda is first moving, and then you move B. Okay? And so it gives you a Minkowski sum decomposition of the brick polytope into some little polytopes, so which are just the convex hulls of these elements. And what is really interesting for us is that these polytopes, they have some nice properties, and they are what are called matroid polytopes. So they are matroid polytopes. Matroid polytope means matroid polytope in French. So they are polytopes whose vertices are just characteristic vectors of the basis of a matroid. Okay. So for us, it's really important, and it opens many questions that I will discuss later on. Okay, and so this was the first. Each of this piece is a matroid polytope. Yes. Yeah. So the brick polytope is a Minkowski sum of matroid polytopes. Yes. Yeah. Okay, and related to that, I have a last boring slide. Afterwards, it's just examples, so we'll see. It's really funny. So the last boring slide is just the relation between this brick polytope and so-called generalized parameter hedra. So a generalized parameter hedra, it was defined by Posnikov. It's just a polytope whose normal vectors are 0, 1 vectors. Then you have some conditions that my lawyer told me to put here, but it's not important. So just think of this as polytopes whose normal vectors are 0, 1, and which are contained in a hyperplane. So this description just exactly means that. And I just told you that the brick polytopes, the normal vectors, they correspond to directed cuts. So they are, in particular, they are matroid, they are generalized parameter hedra. And what is really important for us is that any generalized parameter hedron, you can decompose it as a Minkowski sum of faces of the standard simplex. And it's actually really nice. So this decomposition is just in a Möbius inversion. It's a really nice paper by Dila, Benelli, and Docker. Okay, and so I just showed you one Minkowski decomposition of my polytop, and this is another one. And I would like to understand the relation between them. And we really believe that there is an isolation between them. So Carsten Lange is working on this, for example. In particular, Carsten showed for certain cases how to compute. So here it seems easy, right? I mean, it's just a Möbius inversion, but in practice, a Möbius inversion is exponential. So Carsten showed that you can compute these numbers much faster. And some other question related to that. So I would like to understand, for example, I would like to understand whether any generalized parameter hedron is a Minkowski sum of matrix polytops. This I don't know, and I believe it could be true. Okay, so this is related to that. It's like an open direction that I want to explore. Okay, so we finished with all the combinatorial description, which is a bit boring, and now we have, the nice part. So the nice part is about examples, and this is the motivating part. So I will show you that I can choose the network in such a way that the brick polytope is either an associative hedron or a parameter hedron. And in fact, you can choose the network much more general, and I will explain you. What I obtain is a subgraph of the flip graph, yes. And it's in a dimension which is much lower. So the hope, so you just go too fast for me. The hope was that this polytope that I construct could be a projection of the big polytope I want to construct. And this, in this case, if it is a projection, then imagine you want to construct a polytope and you just obtain a projection. Then somehow what you have to do is just to split each vertex in such a way that you reconstruct the big polytope from the projection. Unfortunately, it's not the case. So the big polytope I want to construct, if it exists, will never project on those polytopes. We have a strange reason for that, but there's a reason for that.
Multi-triangulation polytope or multi-triangulation complex, do you know that the connectivity of the graph is the
It's good. I know that it's, I mean, I know the most you can know before knowing that it's a polytope, I know that it's a combinatorial sphere. So I know that it's vertex shellable, and so somehow I'm just at I cannot know more combinatorially. I need some geometry at that point. Yeah. Okay, so we go to examples. So we start with the easiest one. The easiest one is the parameter hedron. Actually, the easiest one is the point. So I start from this network. So it's a network with n levels and n choose two commutators. So it has only one pseudo-n arrangement on it. I call it a radius network. In particular, the brick polytope is a single vertex. Okay, so this is the easiest one. And now what I do is that I construct what I call a duplicated network. So I start from that, and each commutator, I just duplicate it. So I replace it by two really close commutators. So you see that. And I mean, the only thing that you have to understand is that if you're far enough, then what you see here is exactly what you see here. So this is what is said here. So if you take any pair of commutators here, one of them has to be a contact and one of them has to be a crossing. You have no other choice. Okay, and starting from that, you will see, so first you see that the graph of flips is the n choose two dimensional cube. Well, for each pair of commutator here, you have to choose which one you take as a contact and which one you take as a crossing, so you have a cube. And the next thing is that I have to tell you what is the contact graph of such an arrangement here. So the contact graph, so if you take any, so remember that the contact graph, it's one node for each pseudo line and one arc for each contact. And so here take two nodes, so for example, blue and green. I know that they will have exactly one contact, so there is a contact between blue and green, so I know that there is an arc between blue and green. I just don't know whether it's between blue and green or between green and blue. So I know that the contact graph is just an orientation on the complete graph, so it's a tournament. And I'm interested in the vertices of the brick polytope. So the vertices of the brick polytope are those contact graphs which are acyclic. So they are acyclic tournaments, so they are permutations. And then I just told you also the facets of the brick polytope are correspond to directed cuts in in the contact graph. So here I want a cut in a tournament, in an acyclic tournament, so I just have an ordered partition of n. So you can play with that, and you see that the brick polytope is just a permutahedron. So here is a picture. So remember this picture. This was a graph of flips. So it was the graph of a cube, and the graph of the brick polytope is just the graph of an hexagon. So it's a bit smaller again. And here is a bigger picture, if you prefer the 3D picture. So I started, this is a nice two-dimensional permutahedron, so it's obtained by permuting the letters, permuting the coordinates. And I started drawing for each vertex the corresponding pseudo-line arrangement, but in the middle I get bored, so I stopped. It's difficult, I mean, if you try to do it really, it's difficult. But still, so you can see how it works. Okay, and I want to show you another proof of the fact that this brick polytope is a permutahedron, and the other proof is by this Minkowski form. So the point is, so remember the brick polytope is a Minkowski form corresponding to the polytopes, each one corresponding to a little brick. So the point is that I have two different types of bricks here. The red bricks, which are the bricks which were here, and the green bricks, which are between two adjacent commutators. So let's start from by the red brick. So the red brick, I know exactly what pass above and what pass below. I mean, it's just this brick, if you see from far away. So the characteristic vector of what pass above and what pass below is always the same. So the red brick will just sum as a vertex, so I just don't care about that, because it's a Minkowski sum, so summing a vertex is just a translation. And now a green brick, so here, for example, I know what pass above and below, except blue and red. So the only thing which I don't know is whether blue is on top or whether blue is below. So this brick here will correspond to a certain segment of this type. So I know that my brick polytope is the sum of those segments up to this translation. So I know that it's a permutahedron. So below you have the proof of the fact that the permutahedron obtained as the permutation of the coordinates is just the sum, Minkowski sum of this. Edges. This is the shortest proof I know, actually. So this is the reason why I can put it here. It's with Newton polytopes, not really important. Okay, so we have seen the permutahedron, and now I want to see the associahedron, and actually I want to see many associahedra. So for this we have to remember what we did at the very beginning, so the motivation, so the duality between triangulations and pseudo-line arrangements. So I want to have many such pictures. So I start from, let me just start from the beginning. So I start from a word X on two letters A and B of length n minus 2. And to this word, I associate two things. So first, so let me do on this middle picture, it's easier to see. So first, I associate a certain polygon. So this polygon is obtained as follows. So it's an n-gon, n is here. So this n-gon is obtained as follows. So I put 1 and n at the end of a circle. And then I will put the other letters. If I see an A, then I go up. And if I see a B, I go below. So A is above, B is below. And then I take the convex hull of these points and give me a polygon which I denote Px. So this is Px. And I define also a network. And I don't want exactly to define it. It's the only thing that you have to think about is that it's really the dual of this thing. What do I mean? You see first that it's alternating, so if you take any level, any intermediate level, what you see always the commutators above, below, and so on. So it's an alternating network. And if you look at those, so the first and last pseudo lines, they both pass below and above. And the other one, if you see an A, then the pseudo line passes above. And if you see a B, the pseudo line passes below. So this is really dual object. So in particular, if you go from 1 to 5, you see 1, 4, 5. This is what you see here, 1, 4, 5. And if you continue, you see 5, 3, 2, 1. This is what you see here, 5, 3, 2, 1. So it's really dual objects. And in particular, the commutator which are on the first or the bottom line here, they correspond to the external edges of this polygon. So now I do what we did before. I remove one level. So here I did. So I denote it nx1. So it's the first kernel. So I just remove one level. And I try to cover it with a new pseudo-line arrangement with some contacts. And this is in bijection with triangulations. So again, just let me repeat, a triangulation corresponds to pseudo-line arrangement. a triangle of T is a pseudo line of T star, and a common edge between two triangles is a contact between the corresponding pseudo lines, and a common bisector between two triangles is a corresponding is a crossing here. So it's important for me because so it means that the graph of flips on this object is just the graph of flips on this object. And one thing which is a little bit more important is what is the contact graph on this side. So you have a contact graph, you have one node for each pseudo line, so it means one node for each triangle here, and one edge for each contact. So an edge here between red and green means an edge between red and green because there is this common edge between them. So the contact graph is just an orientation on the dual binary tree of my triangulation, and at that point you should be happy because an orientation on the tree is always acyclic. So for free, I obtain that the brick polytope is the isosahedron for any of this letter X. And so here you see two different pictures, two finely different realization of the isosahedron, and these correspond to two different words. So here it's B, 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 and here it's A, and here it's A, B, B. And you see that they are really finely different. So I was really happy with this project, and one day I realized that it was already constructed, but my very different method by Christoph Holweck and Carsten Lange. So Christoph Holweck is from Montreal and Carsten Lange is from Berlin. So they have some realization of this polytope, actually it's the same, but they don't have the same description, and I will see you in a minute why it's important to have the description. Okay, and just one remark. I have 6 minutes, so it's okay. Just one remark, these yellow things, they correspond to centrally symmetric triangulations, and you see that they are in a hyperplane. And it's nice because you can define a flip graph on centrally symmetric triangulations. This graph is defined as follows. You can a centrally symmetric edge, you can just flip it, and if it's not centrally symmetric, you can flip the two centrally symmetric copies of an edge at the same time, and you obtain a flip graph. And this flip graph is called the cyclohedron. The corresponding polytope, sorry, is called the cyclohedron, and the convex hull of this yellow points is just a realization of it. Okay. So it's fun. I started with the isosahedron. And now I'm in the cyclohedron, and if you know a little bit, you know that it's just about changing the Coxeter group. So I just a work in progress with Christian Stumm from Montreal. But since I'm in Toronto, I have to speak about Coxeter, right? I mean, it's reasonable. So it's just I just want to sketch some things which we have partial proofs of them, not all. So I start from a Coxeter group now. So a Coxeter group. It's just so finite Coxeter group. So it's a finite group generated by orthogonal reflections. So here you have examples. I hope you can see them correctly. So so for example, this group is just a symmetric group, the isometric group of the regular tetrahedron. This group is the isometric group of the regular cross polytope, and this group is a regular. The isometric group of the regular dodecahedron. So we know that this group is just correspond to permits the vertices. This group correspond to permitting these three vertices or changing sign, and this group correspond to permitting these five big cubes which are inside. Well, it's not really important, but they're just usual groups. They are just three-dimensional examples of these two are three-dimensional examples of big families. Okay, so these are Coxeter groups, and I look at what is called a simple system of generators. So it's a set of orthogonal reflections which generate the groups, and it's a simple system. It just means that they correspond to the internal normal vectors of one of the chambers of this arrangement. What I look at is so first we can define the W permutahedron. So it's just you pick a point, a generic point, and just look at the orbit of this point by the Coxeter group and take the convex hull. So in the case of A3, which is the parameter hidden we had before, because this you can see this this group A3 as acting on R4 by permitting the coordinates. Okay, so it's the same parameter hidden we had before, and the others are other polytopes, so W parameter hidden. I just recently looked at a video. It's funny. So in France, people are really crazy. So I just looked at a video of someone who had like 100 models in paper, and he was speaking about those polytopes, and he had a very nice, you know, the Latin name, which I never remember. So they have some nice Latin name. So it was like a, I don't know. In French we say un sage savant. I don't know. So it was knowing all this by heart. So it was really nice. Anyway, so they have some nice names, but for me they are just a W parameter hydra. And on this coxeter groups, I look at what is called subword complex. So it was defined by Alan Kunstler and Ezra Miller. So a subword complex, you start from a coxeter group. So W is a group, S is a generators, and you take a word Q on S and an element of your group. And your goal is to select from your word Q, you want to select some reduced expression of your element pi. So you just have to erase some letters, and this gives you reduced expression. And the complements of those, they form a simplicial complex. So let me read the definition. So the sets of this subword complex are the sets of positions whose complements contain a reduced expression of pi. So the maximal elements of this complex, they are the complements of the reduced expression of pi in Q. Let me give an example. It's really, I mean, it seems strange, but it's really simple. So I look at the symmetry group on three elements, and so I note one for the permutation 1, 2. Okay, so I 1 represents the permutation 1, 2, and 2 the permutation 2, 3, so transposition 2, 3. Okay, so I look at the word 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, and I look at the elements pi, which is the longest permutation. So pi is the element which stands 1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 2, and 3, 2, 1, and this you can write it as these two reduced expressions. So this one I write it 1, 2, 1, and this one 2, 1, 2. Okay, and so my goal is I'm in Q and I want to erase some letters in such a way that I see either this or this. So the maximal elements here, so I just realized that I draw the dual of my complex. I'm sorry. So this is a vertex, but you have to think of it as a facet of the complex. Sorry about that. So this is a maximal element. So it's a maximal element because I remove these two red letters and I keep this reduced expression. So the maximal elements, you see, I just keep in green one of the reduced expressions. And then you just take the down closure of this maximal element and you obtain a simplicial complex. And the simplicial complex is the dual of this pentagon. So sorry for the bad drawing. Okay, and it turns out that this subword complex, we know exactly when it's, what is its topology. So sometimes it's a ball, and sometimes it's a sphere. And there's a nice characterization of this. We don't care about this characterization, just an equality, you see. And for me, I always assume that this equality is fulfilled. So I just always assume that this subword complex is spherical, so it's a sphere. And my question is, I mean, it's not my question, it's Knutson and Miller's question. Is this subword complex realizable as a polytope? And before, yeah, so I just give you an example. The example is just a sorting network. So a sorting network is just, you have n levels, so you are in Sn. I'm done in 2 minutes. You are in Sn, and each commutator, you just, this commutator is just, you exchange 1 and 2. This commutator, you exchange 4 and 5. This commutator, you exchange 2 and 3, and so on. So just a word, a sorting network is just a word in adjacent transpositions. And a pseudo-line arrangement is just each time you have a contact, you don't use it, and each time you have a crossing, you use the commutator. So you just write the invert transposition, so the longest transposition, sorry, the longest permutation, so the permutation which stands 1 to n and n to 1, so the longest one, you just find a reduced expression of this transposition of this permutation in your red queue. So all what we did is just a particular example of this big subword complex. And here is what we have. So we have brick polytopes for subword complexes. So we have a similar definition. Again, it's defined as a convex sum of the brick vectors of all facets of the subword complex. And we have similar combinatorial properties, so we can explain what are the vertices, what are the facets, the faces, and so on. And again, unfortunately, it's not the subword complex that we realize. It's just a certain, let's say, combinatorial projection. It's not geometrically a projection. And it turns out that it's really interesting because it generalizes the notion of Cambrian lattices defined by reading. So it's a huge story about which I just start and try to enter. It's a story about cluster algebras and relation with this. So we can generalize this and explain this actually, at least for me. So it explains it for me. And we have also similar examples. So if you take a duplicated word, so you just take a word, a reduced expression of the longest elements of the group, and you take this reduced expression and just duplicate each letter. And look at the brick polytope, it's the W permutahedron. And we also have the W associahedron. So this W associahedron is the one involved in cluster algebras. And what is interesting this time is we don't only, I mean, before I told you, I was really happy I obtained this associahedron, but it was already known. This time it's already known, but it's the first time that we give the vertex description and the Minkowski decomposition, and this is really useful for them. So it's really a new description, which is completely independent from before, and it just involves many new things. Okay, so it was just... thank you very much.